Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy John. We are off and running on a brand new week and a month. Brand new month. Monday. It's April 1st, 2024. Our radio program in our 14th year with the radio project in our 36th year here in the Tucson media. We're coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, this radio station, one of five under one roof of Bustos Media. This one's 1030 KVOI, the voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We take the live feed from KVOI.com. And of course, we have all of our podcasts available, 13 full years of content. Pretty much every show we have done is archived. Very easy to use website, buckmastershow.com. In fact, we've made very few tweaks in the 14 year history of the program. Hey, if it's not broken, why fix it? So we keep it, what is that? The old keep it simple, stupid. Well, that's the old formula that we're going by. The Buckmaster Show live line for when we do our telephone interviews. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. About a year and 3 months ago, we decided to move on from our Monday political face-off, and I said I'd had enough talking politics and all of that to start the week. So we do now the Monday one-on-one. I'm very happy with the way it's going, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors. We have two of them at the Buckmaster Bungalow. His art, his photography is fabulous. They sell it there at the gallery, and of course, picture framing, they excel there. And perhaps you don't want to get up on the ladder yourself and do the hanging. Let Moe do it. He'll come out. He makes house calls. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Welcoming back to the program, and it's been a while, Dr. Mark Stegeman. Dr. Stegeman, Associate Professor of Economics, his area of expertise at the Eller College of Management, Economic theory, game theory, and industrial organization. He earned his PhD in economics from the very prestigious Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. And, of course, we know Dr. Stegeman very well from his 11 years on the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. He served he was the board president four different times, and he announced his resignation on this radio station back in 2019, and now we reconnect with him on our Monday one-on-one. How are you, Mark?
Very well, and glad to be here, Bill. Thank you.
Well, we have a lot to unpack, and as I'm going over what you've done, let me talk about what you're currently doing. You are the parliamentarian for the University of Arizona Faculty Senate. You've also been involved on the committee since 2012 that looks at the kind of general curriculum at the University of Arizona. And I want to begin there because the Arizona Board of Regents would like to see all students take some kind of a mandatory, not only take, but presumably pass, a civics course. Because we're graduating, I think you'd agree with me, we're graduating young people who may not understand at all how this government works. Would you agree?
I think civics education is not where it needs to be.
So what do we need to do?
Well, ABOR, the Board of Regents, specified that the three universities should all offer American institutions as part of their general education program. And they specified seven content areas they wanted covered, which cover history, law, even economics, to have us talk about how the American system works. And there's a slightly separate idea in their policy that we should be promoting civil discourse and civic engagement and civil disagreement. and aside from the specific knowledge areas. And so I think I'm hoping that we can do all of that at U of A. I'm the chair of an ad hoc committee on general education that crosses 11 colleges. And this is not the standing committee, but an ad hoc committee look at some short-run issues. And one of those is how we do the civics. And I think there's a lot of enthusiasm for trying to do, it's not easy, but trying to do it with fidelity and have a real quality program.
So the Arizona Board of Regents, which is charged with overseeing the three universities, has made this recommendation that this is something that they would like to see. So is the ball then, how does that work? How does this process work moving forward? Who has to approve it at the University of Arizona level?
Well, it's more than a recommendation. They are requiring it.
By when?
Well, there's no fixed deadline.
Okay, there you go.
And they it's been in process for several years. All of the universities are doing a general revamping of general education. It's not just about civics. But civics is a big part of it because civics was not really there before. And so the process at the U of A is that the university-wide general education committee will adopt a plan and support a plan. That's the committee I've been on for 13 years, and that'll go to another committee, and then that'll go to the Faculty Senate, and from there it will go, if it gets through all that, it'll go through A Board. Of course, the administration has the Office of General Education has a big role to play throughout, and will probably originate a proposal that goes to that first committee.
I think it's a good idea. I think the public, I would think, would be behind something like that. I don't really see it. What's the downside?
I don't see any downside. I think it's great, and I've been the region's almost biggest fan on this. I think some people said, well, and I can understand this reaction too, why are they poking their nose into our business and how we run the university, and isn't this getting a little granular for the regents? And I get that, but I think there is a need, and I have been, I'd say on this particular issue, their biggest fan, saying this was a good idea. They're not telling us exactly how to do it, and we should figure out something that works for us and do it with enthusiasm, I think.
Well, speaking of granular, the Arizona legislature would like, there are some at the legislature that would like to get involved in your area, the University of Arizona, the faculty. They'd like to have a say. They'd like to see perhaps even reorganization. You were quoted in the Arizona Daily Star as the parliamentarian, and normally as the parliamentarian, you don't usually take stands, but you said this would be a very bad idea.
Well, they wanted to remove I think the impact of the bill would be to remove the very limited authority that the Faculty Senate has and give it to the administration.
Yes.
And I'm not anti-administration, but they already have a very immense amount of, in some ways, almost unchecked authority. And there have been some missteps lately.
And it could be the understatement.
I think the Faculty Senate performs a useful role, a limited role in curriculum, and it should keep that role. Bill got through committee in the Senate. I went up there and testified, and there was some, I think even on the Republican side, there are some concerns. It did pass, but it's now been retained. And so I don't know whether it's going to come out of the Senate or not in the end.
Speaking of the legislature, front page of the Arizona Daily Star today, there is now a bill. Representative Wadzak is pushing a bill that would make currently the school boards are nonpartisan, something you know very well. This bill would make school boards, that nonpartisan would go away, and it would be Republican, Democrat, Independent, or Libertarian, Green Party, whatever. There would be party labels. Bad idea, Mark Segeman?
Well, I think it's a bad idea. When I first ran, I ran as a Democrat, and then the Democratic Party, local Democratic Party, and I had some disagreements. And then for my second two elections, I ran as an independent and had a better performance in each election than the one before. I think people liked what I was doing. But would I have got through a Democratic primary? I don't know. I might have, but on the other hand, I wouldn't bet on it because there was a lot of opposition. So I think that's a bad idea. I think that the school board elections often get somewhat partisan anyway, and this would just amp that up. And I don't know why. I don't know what's the impetus for that.
And I referred to Wadzak as representative. She is, of course, a state senator, Justine Wadzak, who is sponsoring this move. And the argument is that voters don't really know much about the people running for school boards. So her contention is that putting a party label would help.
Well, there's some truth to that. That's, I think, in political science, it's accepted that one of the advantages of a party system is that it does help people to give a first understanding of where people stand. So that's not a completely bogus argument, but I think that the net effect on school board elections would be terrible. I think people knew where I stood when I ran as an independent, and I think maybe it's because it worked for me, but I would hate to see that option go away.
It is our Monday one-on-one. Mark Stegeman is here. Dr. Stegeman, former Tucson Unified School District Governing Board President, four times as the Governing Board President. Of course, he has a very couple of important roles over at the University of Arizona as well. We are going to take a break right here. We'll have more with Dr. Stegeman after we tell our listeners, Mark, about Mona's Danish Bakery. Have you been up to Mona's lately?
Not lately, Bill, but I have been up there, and I remember our conversations about it from.
And you've enjoyed it in the past.
Oh, yes.
Mona's
Absolutely.
Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. The new enhancement there, they are pouring liquor right now. They have a liquor license, and you can have your mimosa with your breakfast or a beer with your lunch. They are closed on Monday, open tomorrow at 6:30. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. It's the Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Dr. Mark Stegeman with us on the one-on-one. Be right back with Mark. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and Hanging and Lighting Solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Monday one-on-one is with Dr. Mark Stegeman, who was a very familiar voice, certainly during his time on the TUSD Governing Board. Four times he was the president, so he was on this radio show many times. In fact, he chose this venue in 2019 to give a rather... At the time, it was kind of shocking. He said that he would be resigning from the TUSD Governing Board. Any regrets about that, Mark Stegeman, that decision? Did you make the right decision?
I have no regrets about that one.
That one?
My kids were very young. I needed to spend more time with them. I needed to spend more time at my job. And I never looked back.
And your job, of course, at the University of Arizona, you're involved at the Eller College of Management. And one thing that you've probably explained it a lot of times on the radio show in the past, but one of your areas of expertise is game theory. Can you make that a simple, can you simply explain what is game theory?
Yeah, game theory was invented in the 1930s. And became a big deal in economics in the 1950s. And it's basically about predicting how people act in strategic interactions with a small number of people. We think of markets, supply and demand, as large numbers of people interacting. Mm-hmm. But what if there's five people involved in a negotiation? What can we say about what we expect? And that's what game theory is about.
But of course, game theory, when people hear it nowadays, they would assume video games.
Yes, yes.
And I'm sure you get that all the time.
Well, and I think there are a couple of courses in our general education curriculum related to video games, but that's got very little to do with game theory as we practice it in the profession.
When you talk, you are the parliamentarian for the faculty senate. In that role, can you talk at all about your feelings about the University of Arizona's financial situation, which is so well publicized? Everybody knows there are issues there at UA. What can you say about it?
Well, I have opinions about that, and I know quite a bit about it, although less than some of my colleagues, certainly. But I have generally not commented on that. As parliamentarian, I have mostly stayed out of things that don't affect my college directly, the Eller College, because I do represent them, and general education, which has been my greatest specialization at U of A. So, yes, I know a lot about it, but I don't say much about it.
And you don't want to say much about it right now other than it's a mess?
Well, I do think that a lot of misleading statements have been made about it from various sources, and...
In what regard, generally?
Well, I think that, and I have said this before, I think it's good that they're doing an external financial audit. I think that was called for. But the issues, the administration issues at U of A are more than financial record keeping and whether people are staying within budgets. And I've said this before, I think the U of A really needs a management audit from an outside independent company. And that looks at how decisions are made, how the org chart's set up. It goes beyond just finances. And I think someone needs to come in and look at how the whole thing runs. I don't think there's any sign of that happening yet, but maybe we'll get there.
Civics education is how we started this this conversation with you today. On the high school level, isn't that a mandatory requirement now to graduate from high school?
Yes. My impression, certainly when I was at TUSD, and I think this is still true, is that the implementation of that has been fairly perfunctory. And when I have talked about the advantage of doing serious civics at the university level, people say, well, isn't that what they do in high school?
Yes.
And my response is, well, frankly, I don't think they're doing very much of it, despite that state mandate. So I think there is a role for the university there.
You were elected, first elected, back in 2008. And again, as I mentioned, you served four times as the board president. And you were weathering and were part of some boards that there were a lot of controversies going on. To put that mildly, right, as an understatement. The one that comes to mind was the district's Mexican American Studies program, which you were an opponent of, correct?
Well, I became an opponent of it when the state law was passed that prohibited certain kinds of teaching, and I thought that law correctly applied did require shutting down the program as it existed then. And we went through a judicial proceeding, and the judge agreed that needed to happen. Now, later, that law was almost completely overturned, and I was surprised that the board, when a progressive majority got back in control, it went back and forth a few times, did nothing to bring it back. Because after the law had been declared unconstitutional, there was really no barrier to bringing it back. But there was never a move to do that.
And, of course, Tom Horn was a player, and he's back. How was your relationship with Mr. Horn?
Well, I still know Mr. Horn, and we have had a couple of encounters at events and so forth. But although he has a ex officio position on the Board of Regents, so
yes,
in that sense there's still a connection, I don't think he's, and I don't blame him, I don't think he's particularly focused on that. He's mainly focused on being the superintendent of public instruction for K-12, and that's probably what he should be mainly focused on.
Mm-hmm. One of your big issues when you were on the board, again, for more than 11 years, you felt accountability from 1010, the headquarters, which might move. It might not be called 1010 anymore.
So I've heard.
Yes. So you wanted more accountability, and you wanted less management, so to speak, management-level positions and more dollars going back into the classroom. Generally, would you say that has happened since you've departed?
I haven't followed it closely enough to know, I think. And I'm sorry to say, it did happen during my last few years. We did manage to move millions of dollars out of administration into instruction. But after I left, and that was one of my goals that I felt I'd accomplished, but to what extent that's continued, Bill, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The timing of my resignation was not random. There were certain things I wanted to accomplish. And then when I had accomplished that list, that was when, which had partly to do with helping Camp Cooper secure its future, and it had partly to do with ending some pretty bad employment practices we had. It had partly to do with ensuring that we would have an internal auditor going forward. But once I had done those things, then I had resolved that I would step down.
So you felt that was, you'd done pretty much what you needed to do, and then you moved on with your life.
Well, there was always more to do, but I had decided at some point that I would try to accomplish a certain list of things, and then I did. And I really wanted to spend time with my children, who were then very young.
And now you are the parent of a child who is in the TUSD system.
Well, actually, two, because Patrick is at Fruchtendler. And Marie is at a TUSD preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, I have two kids in the system, and we're both very happy with the education that they're getting. I mean, my wife and I. But I can't say I've kept up with overall district affairs very much. I think it's a very positive thing that it looks like they have a good chance from getting out from the under the desegregation order finally.
Okay.
And that will be, I mean, I'm not completely up to date, but I think there's a good chance that that will finally go away. And I think that will make governing the district a lot easier.
Dr. Mark Stegeman, good catching up with you. Appreciate you coming in.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Dr. Mark Stegeman with us on our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge. They're right next to Copenhagen. We thank Moe and his family for their support of our Monday one-on-one. Today we're doing a bonus, going to do two Monday one-on-ones, and we'll pick up the second half of our Monday one-on-one after we take this break. It's Buckmaster on the first day of April. Be right back.
Dine-in or take-out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Everything you need on their 13-acre site to do your spring gardening, and it's a perfect time of year for that. When we do our live line, that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Today we've got a bonus for you, a bonus Monday one-on-one, previously aired February 5th. We believe it is worth a second listen. And Historic Theater in Tucson continues with its restoration. Teatro Carmen opened its doors, 1915. 380 South Meyer in the old barrio, Viejo Barrio. The building, 100, and let's see, that would make it 107 year.
It'll be 108 this
108,
year.
108. Herb, thank you very much. The 108 year old building has been home to many things. At one time, it was an Elks clubhouse. Actually, for a long time, for a half a century, Herb Stratford, who gets credit for the rehabilitation of the Fox Theater over two decades ago, is now focused on Teatro Carmen. Herb Stratford and his nonprofit, Stratford Artworks Incorporated, working real hard to turn the space into eventually a performing arts venue. Along with his historic theater consulting and restoration, Herb is director of Film Fest Tucson. He's also very much involved with a couple of film festivals around the country, one in Vero Beach, Florida, then one out on Long Island on Long Beach. Herb did an outstanding documentary film about the American arts and crafts furniture designer Gustav Stickley, who at the height of his fame in the early 1900s operated the Craftsman Building, a 12-story retail and office space in New York City. Herb, always great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. And boy, you're that was quite an introduction. I got tired just listening about myself.
Well, I think I covered all the bases. I mean, you're a busy guy. You've got... and of course, I should mention you do radio and TV film critic work on a couple of stations here in town. So you keep your hands in that as well.
Yeah, I'm a member of the Critics' Choice Association. So we do the annual Critics' Choice Awards, which took place a couple weeks ago. So yeah, I'm definitely in that industry, but I have a strong pull and a strong interest in preservation. And that's why it's so great to be here in Tucson, because there are projects that can be preserved and brought back to life.
And Teatro Carmen is doing well. You showed me an image of the outside. That's all the original brick. Where are you on the process there?
So the whole process is probably about $8.5 to $9 million project. We have raised about half that money, so we're still sort of in the depths of it. But we wanted to demonstrate to people, much like we did at the Fox, that we're moving forward and we're making progress. So we got some grants to restore the facade. And that is about to be sort of debuted. I believe the fence will come down a week from today. And we were pouring the sidewalk this morning. So we restored the facade, and we were lucky we could find one photograph from 1917 that we stumbled on at the Historical Society. So we knew what the building had looked like in 1915 and then opened, this photo in 1917. So what you're seeing when you see the Carmen today is that 1915 facade. And then next door, there was a fruit stand that became an expanded part of the Black Elks when they were there from 36 to 86. And we have restored that facade back to 1941 because we found those plans. And so you really have some nice little slices of history, of barrio history, 1915 and 1940, right next to each other. And, now we're pivoting to the roof next, because everybody's got to have a good roof. Mm-hmm. And we want to get that repaired and restored and fixed and a brand new roof on before the monsoon hits. So,
what's the footprint of this property? I mean, how large is it?
You know, it's about a third the size of the Fox. So it's just under 10,000 square feet.
That's an intimate space.
It is. And it'll be 250 to 300 seats. And so it's a real nice niche. There's really nothing that size. The Fox, which of course, I love dearly, you know, that was a 30,000 square foot building with, you know, 1,164 seats. That's a lot of seats. 300 is an easier room to fill, I guess we could say.
Yeah.
So,
the publicity has been good already. Condé Nast is a very popular travel magazine. Condé Nast Traveler is the name of it. I subscribe to it, and a lot of people who love travel do. And you got a nice little write-up in there.
We did, yeah. They mentioned Tucson as and Barrio Viejo as one of their top destinations this year. We were also in the New York Times recently. We have really been really blessed and really lucky for two things. One, Barrio Viejo is about to be declared a National Historic Landmark District, and that raises the profile of our neighborhood. The only other national landmark designated places are Tumamoc Hill and San Javier, so that tells you what level we're talking about. And also, we have a great relationship with the folks at Visit Tucson, and they are very good about telling our story to journalists. Actually, I have a journalist from the UK coming in tomorrow to walk through the theater with me. So they've been directing folks to us, and it's a great story that there is a 1915 theater in the barrio that still exists and is going to be used again as it was originally intended.
Amateur theater or professional theater?
It was professional theater. It was the nicest. When you think about Tucson in 1915, this is 4 years before the Rialto. This is 15 years before the Fox.
Right.
So there was the Opera House. There was Levin Gardens. There was some other facilities, but this was the nicest theater, specifically for Spanish language productions. So they had touring Mexican plays. They had touring operas. I've done some deep diving, and we found touring magicians. I mean, we found all kinds of sort of almost vaudevillian type things that would happen. But because it was in the barrio, you see a lot less of that information has been survived. So with the Fox, I had opening night insurance photos. We had a lot of newspaper coverage.
Of documentation.
Yeah. In the barrio, I've got some Spanish language newspapers. I don't really have very many photographs, almost none. And so it's a little more of a digging project. But yes, it was a lot of things. And then also the building is fascinating because it was the theater for a couple of years. It didn't really succeed. The woman that started it didn't really have a nose for business. So then it became a wrestling place. Then it became a fish market. Then it became a garage. And then the Black Elks bought it. And the Black Elks were there. And then, you know, then it was sort of a pop-up art space in the late 80s. RuPaul and Henry Rollins performed there at one point. It's just got this amazing, incredible history of a space that had all these different activities that so uniquely speak to Tucson and the Tucson experience.
When did you first get involved then with the, how did that come about with the Fox? How did that whole project begin?
So, you know,
short story.
The Fox, yeah, sure. The Fox, I actually snuck into it when it was boarded up in the late 80s and fell in love with that building and then started the nonprofit and then, you know, ended up raising the money and restoring the building. Sort of a similar story with the Carmen, where I had seen the Carmen back in the early 90s and had sort of forgotten about it. And so when the call came in, are you interested in maybe looking at this theater to try and do something, and I said, I am. Those are the two words you could say to me that would get me interested is Teatro Carmen. That was the one that, it's so different from the Fox. You know, it's 180 from the Fox, and so an interesting challenge for us to do.
All right, well, I'm more with Herb Stratford talking about his restoration projects, talk a little film with him as well. It's our Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Be right back with Herb Stratford.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. What a beautiful April 1st, if you like a little rain, and I don't mind it. April showers, what do they say? April showers bring May flowers, and we are having a delightful early spring in Tucson, Arizona. It's also very beautiful over at the Gila National Wilderness in Silver City, in that area of Grant County, New Mexico. I send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. I suggest checking out their website before you make the approximately 3-hour drive from Tucson over to Silver City. The website, southwestnewmexico.org. We're doing a bonus Monday one-on-one today. Previously aired February 5th, more with Herb Stratford. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, off and running on this Monday with our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They are located next to Copenhagen, and now very close to Monsoon Chocolate at Fort Lowell and Dodge. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, and their website looks really good doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Actually, I've got a few items that are part of that website from my collection of antique maps and prints. So there's some of the Buckmaster collection at moesgallery.com. Might want to check it out. There's some really good stuff there. We've got good stuff with me in studio. Herb Stratford is here. Herb is a historic property developer. How about that, Herb?
you can call it that.
Yeah,
sure.
Work on the known, probably well known for his work on the Fox Tucson Theater a couple of decades ago, and now his new project, Teatro Carmen, which is really coming along. It's at 380 South Meyer in a neighborhood that is soon to be declared a national monument.
Yeah, a national
that
historic
would mean
landmark,
that
yeah.
People can't screw around with it, right?
Well, Yeah, I mean,
you could, I guess. There are ways around anything, but
sure. But it just raises the bar and also opens up funding, which is great because when you're part of that designation, there's grants that are available and things like that. And it's a recognition that this is the largest existing barrio in the United States, which is pretty remarkable.
And it was even bigger before.
It was a lot bigger. Yeah.
Before the convention center came along. But that's for another show. You're involved with a couple of film festivals, Vero Beach in Florida, Long Beach out on Long Island. Are film festivals, how is that whole scene? Is it a dynamic growing area?
You know,
or
it's
kind of leveled off.
You know, it's an interesting thing with the proliferation of streaming platforms and more ways to experience content. You would think that there would be more appetite for content, but there's also more white noise, and so it's harder to find things, you know, for people. So the film festival world is a very important sort of cog in that system because emerging filmmakers, you know, let's just take Sundance and sort of the top two or three people off the table, but the other 9,000 film festivals around the world, you know, that's where people get their films seen. And that's where you build word of mouth and buzz, and you hopefully can maybe find a place for it to go. In the case of our Stickley film, because we released it during COVID, we didn't have that festival circuit because festivals were sort of on hiatus, but we managed to find a distributor. So that was sort of the end result anyway that we wanted. But it's an important part and of that whole ecosystem for filmmakers to have that platform. But you know, there are so many of them. Where do you apply? You know, how do you do that? It costs money to apply. You know, it's a whole other job. Making the film is half of the job. Then you have to get it seen.
Where can people take a look at the Stickley film, which I really liked, spotlighting American arts and crafts furniture designer Gustav Stickley?
It's on Amazon Prime, and it's on Apple iTunes. And so if you just type in Gustav Stickley.
And it's feature length.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, it's really, you know, kudos to you. It's really professionally done.
Well,
if people are at all into arts and crafts, and I know you're into arts and crafts, you're into Art Deco, certainly, as am I. Also, speaking of film festivals, you're director of the Film Fest Tucson, which is now how many years old?
This will be our eighth year in October, and we're in the second weekend of October every year, and we're downtown. And one of the things that we like to do is we have screenings at the Scottish Rite Cathedral, which is, of course, another 110-year-old building. We do things outside. We do a lot of things, but it's all very walkable, and there's usually five or six different screenings going on, and we're all about downtown and history and film and Tucson, and we've had some really great success with audiences and with guests, you know, coming out to be with us. We had Rachel Ward last year, the famous Rachel Ward, you know, from Against All Odds, and then we also the year before that we had Phil Rosenthal from Somebody Feed Phil.
I love that movie, by the way, Against All Odds.
Yeah. It's a classic.
It is a classic movie. So getting back to the Carmen, so you got a couple of years maybe work left with that project. And do you envision some kind of a cafe there? What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're almost creating a campus on that site because it's the two buildings, the Carmen building and then the Black Elks expansion. And then there was an empty lot that was next to that where there used to be a Chinese market until 1961. And so we're turning that outdoor, that empty lot into a 7,000 square foot patio. So there will be the theater, a bar and restaurant, and the outdoor patio all on that block. And that is one of the reasons why it's taking a little bit longer. It's complicated.
It is, and it's really hard to find like a vacant lot anymore in downtown, isn't it?
It is. And then, you know, as soon as you start to turn dirt, then you're finding, you know, artifacts. We did the early archaeological excavation on site, and there was two privy pits, which are outhouse pits. And we, of course, did it professionally with archaeologist Homer Thiel. And we were pulling up Chinese ceramics from the 1860s, complete bottles. I mean, just really remarkable stuff. So anytime you dig downtown, you have to have monitoring because something's coming out of the ground.
So How does it work once the project is completed? Do you then start booking groups to come in, or what? How does that process work?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You go overnight from restoring a building to operating a building, and you really have to have all your ducks in a row. And we did that at the Fox. And yeah, about a couple months out, you start booking, you start trying to figure out your staffing, but you have to hit the ground running, and that is the second part of this is the operations part. And we will be we'll be running that building, and we're very excited about what that means. It means theater and film and performance, all kinds of things, music, whatever we can do in that building. Because of its unique size, it's really going to be an asset to downtown.
From a financial point of view, Herb, there are grants that I know you know that part of the business so well. That kind of helps, right, to say the least.
It does, yeah. And I mean, the other thing about this building is,
but it's not going to drive a project completely.
No. And the thing is, any performing arts facility is going to meet about half of its expenses with its ticket sales and its whatever ancillary income. The rest of it has to come from other activities, and that could be fundraising or philanthropy or grant writing or whatever. We're lucky with the Carmen because of its Hispanic, its African American, and then by tangent, its Asian history. We tick a lot of boxes, and so a lot of funders are like, wow, this is a really unique project. And so we're going to make sure we tell the story of that property there. So there's going to be interpretive displays. There's going to be, we're not just going to pretend it was one thing. It was everything to the community for a long time.
You have seen the evolution of downtown Tucson, and I'm just wondering, as you see it, how do you judge it?
That's a whole other show.
Yep.
I'm so proud of, and I've been in town. This is my 40th year that I've been here because I came to go to the University of Arizona in 1983. And I am so proud of what has been accomplished downtown. And I think the things like the Fox and the Rialto and the Streetcar and the, Hotel Congress. And I mean, all these amazing things that have happened. What I hope happens before I pass on is I hope somebody tells that story, and we get to have that narrative told, because it is such a lot of downtowns have this story. It happens all over the country, but I want our story to be told. And I think this is really important because there's people who really, Richard Oseran, for example, and Shana at the Hotel Congress. I mean, people that really gambled big and made a difference downtown and made our community what it is. And I hope we tell that story. But yeah, I'm excited that we have another project that is downtown and that we're still able to continue to grow on the successes that we all started in the 80s.
That story could be put together in a feature, I think. I mean, I think you would need 90 minutes to tell that story. But it's a unique story.
It is. And I think, there's still, the majority of the folks are still around. I mean, there's people that have passed, like Berta Wright, and, some people that are not around anymore. But I'd love that story to get told while the people can receive, the attention that they may have not gotten.
How has streaming changed the business, the radio and TV and film?
It's almost overwhelming. I'll tell you that as a critic, I get access to a lot, not necessarily everything, but a large majority of stuff. And I have a hard time. I drowned in content. And so the role of a critic, I think, is important to let people know what's worth seeing. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. There is so much content with so many streamers. I honestly feel like there is a consolidation coming. I think you're going to see those windows shrink. I think you're going to see some consolidations. I think Paramount Plus is going to be in trouble. I think there's going to be some things that are going to merge. Mm-hmm. There's too many. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, you look at your bills and you're like, how many streaming services am I paying for? So that's coming. But, it's an interesting time to be a creator because there are more platforms.
Yeah. And you look at any movie these days, any feature film, before you even get to the movie, there's probably 5 to sometimes even 10 different production houses that are pooled together to make the movie.
Yeah. It's an interesting time in television and film. And it's exciting on one hand, but it's also, like I said, it's hard. There's so much white noise. There's so many things competing for your attention. How do you figure that out?
Before we go, who wins Best Picture this year?
Personally, my favorite is Poor Things, but I believe that Oppenheimer will sweep the awards this year.
Yeah, I enjoyed Oppenheimer. A little bit long, but certainly worthwhile. Herb Stratford, thank you very much. People want to get a little bit more on Carmen. Do you have a... a website or
we
anything?
We do, teatrocarmen.org, and that is where you can go, and we try and update that. But also drive by mm-hmm. check it out.
Again, 380 South Meyer in downtown Tucson. Herb, thank you very much. And Herb was right, wasn't he, about Oppenheimer winning the best picture. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show today. Thanks to John, engineering and producing. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.